Hi there and welcome to episode 159 of the ADHD Adults Podcast. I'm James Brown, the man who went to the Polytechnic of Life, but only got in through clearing. And as usual, I'm joined by Dr. Alex Connor, who only added the word education to his title, Alex the Psycho, because actually that was taken on Instagram. And Mrs. ADHD, who had a former career in prison-based education. But actually what they do is just let her speak to prisoners to let them decide if they wanted to end up like that. Alex, hi.
Higher education today, is it? Higher education. Oh, that one wrote itself. Yeah, it just is.
Did it also write all the bad ones, all the other bad ones as well? Did it?
Yeah. Like that one.
And Sam, hi.
Hiya.
How are you both, Mrs. ADHD first?
How are you?
Was that just a 5-second pause followed by how are you?
You forgot to answer the question verbally.
I didn't forget. I couldn't answer it. I couldn't work out.
You looked really frightened for 5 seconds and then just said, how are you? Which, of course, no. And Alex, obviously...
I've got James, sorry. Sam, was your brain going, oh, you're supposed to say fine, but I'm not completely fine, so I can't say anything.
I don't know if I am. I don't actually know how I'm feeling. Just ask him how he is. Deflect it.
No one's noticed.
My new response is nothing's on fire. That's the bar for things being okay. If nothing's on fire,
I always say I'm still alive.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, so. It is. And Alex, nobody cares, especially me. But how are you?
Yes, you do. I'm excellent, thanks, James. Yeah. Numbers intern's been in touch, tells me that they really need a good look at their life. If they're this obsessed with numbers, it's tragic. Also tells me that we're ticking just over the 1 million plays since we recently moved to Spotify, which seems like a big number to me. Something, something metrics, but also something, something madness. One of whom sent us a letter, not one of the band Madness, one of those people.
Carry on.
It's like the only popular culture reference I've ever got.
He's a bit of an arsehole, apparently, as well.
Really?
Yeah, so I've heard.
I've forgotten what we're talking about, to be honest.
Dogs from Madness.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's right. It's a paper from Robert from Kidderminster. It says, I listened to your episode on dental health. James said he doesn't have false teeth, but how come they come out at night then? He's like a Dracula, do you see? Do you understand the joke?
Yeah.
He was never that witty.
Got it.
Let's be honest. Bobbert was a lovely guy, but he was never that witty. And nor are you, so I'm guessing you're getting someone.
I didn't notice anything.
Yeah, exactly. Really? Yeah, very inattentive. Yeah.
Talking of which, James, do you want to tell everybody... Do you want to tell everybody why you've been having a little bit of anxiety?
So, all right. So I've been getting afternoon anxiety for the last few weeks, 2 or 3 o'clock, like a full onset of anxiety. And I've been chatting to Alex about it. And Sam's been very aware of it and trying to work out what it is. And then yesterday took my full dose of medication for the first time in a couple of months because I've not been able to get them. Yeah, just been taking the 50 in the morning and not the 20 top up. And funnily enough, didn't get the anxiety yesterday.
It's that coincidence, I'm sure.
Complete coincidence. Coincidentally, I was not anxious. Nothing to do with me not realizing I wasn't taking my full dose of medication.
My poor instructor told me off for not taking mine. Anyway, that's for a different day.
I've had a real one. Can I read it out?
Please do.
No.
Dear ADHD adults. I just wrote you a lovely letter and I pressed something and have no idea if I submitted or deleted it and can barely remember a word I wrote. Guess what I'm seeking diagnosis for? Claire from Starbridge, you got him. I'm not writing all that out again. Short version. Friend got diagnosed, started Googling to support her. Shit, this is me. That's okay. But shit, I've been masking forever. And that's exhausting. And I've been gaslighting people I love and emotionally dysregulating all over my husband. Ding.
Definite ding.
Love the question marks. Perfect.
Definite ding.
And this is all quite humbling to have to acknowledge. And we're with you, Claire. Anyway, bit disappointed, know who. Anyway, I found your podcast a month ago. I'm on episode 126. I've learned loads. Wow. I feel less alone in this. Thank you for being your whole vulnerable, foul mouth, pedantic, abusive, reflectionless, Coldplay loving selves. And it doesn't say and Alex and Sam, but I presume, but that's what it means. You have helped me process grief, put words to my experiences, and accept myself as I am. You're doing an amazing thing. I'm now on a waiting list for diagnosis. Thanks for pointing me to Right to Choose, England and Wales. And also, Alex, your Birmingham accent. Sorry, just England, yeah, of course. Alex, I mean, I was thinking about the cricket. Alex, your Birmingham accent is actually a Dudley accent and it's shit.
That's the reason I put that one in.
That's brilliant.
Claire, spot on. Jeez, Claire. I'm starving. It is shit. You are. I'm not. I don't know.
Thanks, Claire. We love that one.
Wow. Just last thing, as usual, Tarquin, the metrics intern, has given me some information about another city we've got listeners in. It's the magical city of Raleigh in North Carolina because of Heather from NC last week. Remember?
What?
Or the week before. I couldn't remember the name. I'm doing a corporate thing.
I remember NC.
Yeah. So Raleigh is the capital of North Carolina, I think in the US, the United States. Okay. Little known fact, Sam, the city of Raleigh was named after the famous bicycle that Sir Walter cycled to Raleigh to invent potatoes for Queen Elizabeth I. Until then, the city was known as Muddy Fox.
There's a lot of references. You went, Muddy Fox is a type of BMX back in the 80s and 90s.
Oh, I recognised that and thought, why do I recognise that? I fucking loved BMXs. I didn't have a Muddy Fox because I had no money. But I loved my BMX. Absolutely loved it.
Daisy gets mentioned now, Alex. People talk to me about Daisy. She's like the fourth.
Yeah, because Sian's dog reacted to Daisy. Oh, my God, he's gone.
He has gone. We'll keep going. We'll keep going because he might come back.
Yeah. Sian was driving along in the van and her dog, who never reacts to any other dogs, hates Daisy, it turns out. I don't know if she hates her. But started barking away at Daisy. Yeah.
Amazing. Alex is back for those that aren't watching on video. That was, it's normally me that walks off. Well done, mate.
I tried to press mute and I pressed stop.
Amazing. Amazing.
Daisy's seen the postman. Yeah. Sorry about that all.
That's all right.
It's fine. Sorry anyway, as usual, this Aldi checkout worker who passively aggressively nods towards the long shelf where you're supposed to pack your items. But let's face it, we all like the challenge of trying to keep up of a podcast is a tragedy in three parts. We choose a theme. Last time around was about ADHD and dental health or oral health. Maybe there's a ding. I don't know. And this week we're going to be discussing, as part of a double fister, ADHD and higher education. Three parts. Include the devil in a cardigan of evidence, Alex the psycho education monkey.
Hello.
Talking about the theme. In part two, we give our personal reflections and wicked tips on ADHD and higher education. And then we'll answer your questions in the final section, which is called Your Questions or something. Please give us a better name for the final section because I don't know.
What's the devil in a cardigan? Or is that just because I sometimes wear a cardigan?
Yeah. It's a lyric from a Flight of the Conchords song called Demon Woman. And at the end, he says devil in a cardigan. And I just think it fits you perfectly.
Pretty accurate.
So it is. So, Alex, tell us about higher education and ADHD.
Yeah.
I mean, so James and I are both academics, have worked and work in higher education, and Sam works in higher education as well. Mm. So it was hard to write this to know what to focus on, really. So we're really open to like doing more on bits of it later on, so please ask. As far as I can see, the internet seems to imply that ADHD is a sort of Schrodinger's intelligence. So we seem to have simultaneously so much stupidity that we can't go to university and get a diagnosis if we have been, but at the same time so unbelievably goddamn creative. All of the best university students have ADHD, and if we just applied ourselves, we would be billionaires with PhDs and CEOs. Predictably, the truth is that there are no differing levels of intelligence on average between adults with and without ADHD. Whilst this means that we could succeed at university at exactly the same levels as everyone else, if we're clever enough, the truth is a bit more depressing.
Is this another one where we are shit? We'll get complaints. I read that out. Could you tell?
Yeah, it was horrible to hear.
Yeah.
Have you done voiceover work, Sam? Yeah. So there's quite a market never. For
What about professional acting?
No. They'd really? Have to be based in Stoke. I can only do this accent.
Right, yeah. And they don't travel, do they?
And that's the only limiting factor. is just the lack of accents. There's nothing else. That's a barrier to a career as an actor or actress.
Imagine her going, this is the way. Hang on, that yoga isn't real. Can you imagine? Yoda, Sam, Yoda. This is a puppet, you see, and you would find it like a big lie to the audience.
No, I thought you said yoga.
I was going to say
yoga is real. I was
going to think. Just on track, people. Yes, please. Podcast Daddy is asking, you know.
Definitely not, Sam. Well, thank you for the...
You wrote question. It down for me.
The most important takeaway from all of this, I think, Chinese takeaway. No, the most important... That's an actual joke. The most important thing is... There is no reason why adults with ADHD shouldn't have comparable academic experiences to anyone else with the right, pretty inexpensive support being available. We just need a tiny bit of help knowing what that support is and that someone has to say yes to it.
All right, got it. Next.
Annoyingly, despite that, and get ready for a really boring list of facts, klaxon. Adults with ADHD are, one, less likely to go to university in the first place. B, less likely to get grades concomitant with their intellect. James, that means in line with. Three, more likely to drop out of university. Delta, less likely to get a degree concomitant.
Delta.
She likes Greek, so that's...
She was pronouncing it properly, was she?
Yes.
Less likely to get a degree in line. Concomitant with their intellect. And fumph, more likely to need help and support during university.
So I've just gone back and counted. This is the third bit, your third section of this, and you've done ADHD already. This is kind of hijacking and derailing one of my only bits in the entire fucking podcast.
That's right, Bob. It is. Hello, Claire from Starbridge as well. It is shit. You're right.
Prick. So if the list that you read out is true, Alexis just said something for some reason, then what happens is that list true if we are diagnosed, treated, supported, managed, etc.?
Some of the other bits still need support. If we're treated and supported, almost all of that goes down to the same levels as anyone else. That's what's so frustrating, isn't it? But, and it's a big but, James, the way higher education is designed and run in, let's be honest, most universities across the world is almost by definition a heteronormative barrier for the way our brains work, even with medication support, because that we work differently. That's what neurodivergent means. There is a move, of course there is, from amazing academics towards active learning. But it is so much more expensive to do that than to sit in a great big lecture hall being bored at. That's what you and I, it's one of the reasons we hated it, right? That was the expectation. Oh, you can't do all those things, James. You've got to just spend an hour just blaring at people instead of what you really wanted to do, wear a funny hat. Most, and there are loads of them, good academic teachers and support staff do exceptional work. And some university support fantastically, but it absolutely isn't universal. I wouldn't even say it was that common. And here's the kicker. Adults with ADHD who've already jumped through those barriers, which requires a certain amount of executive function anyway, and have got the support offer they need from the university, are still only 45% likely to access that support. It's probably because of lots of things, the stigma of getting it and the self-esteem needed to take support. I don't deserve it kind of thing. I'm a fraud. The admin of doing it, organizing it, laziness, internalized imposter syndrome, and the fear of disclosing an ADHD diagnosis.
Laziness.
Okay, not laziness. That one, that was a joke. The rest were true. It's the only demographic I can do those sorts of jokes on because I'm one of them.
So why is it happening? Why do we struggle with all the things, all of the things?
Excellent question, Sam. James, it's not that hard, is it?
You wrote it down.
Not at the minute, no.
Why is it happening? Why is it a problem? There isn't one reason. And we know that individual responsibility is a part of it. We don't want those complaints of Alex and James and Sam are saying we can't get a degree. That's never it. Our own individual responsibility is how people with ADHD do everything. That's really the problem. We're not victims. We're not playing the victim. But often with ADHD, we face that accusation. To be honest, usually for myself. The core diagnostic criteria. Oh, was it the massive pause?
I thought I'd missed something. I thought I'd miss my, like I usually do.
I even put dots in the script so you wouldn't get panicked. Can you see? Dot, dot, dot. Look at the core diagnostic criteria of ADHD, and it's a who's who of things ADHD people might struggle to do at university. Take your pick. I mean, if we just throw anyone out, James and Sam, I'm sure you know them. Sitting still when sitting still is expected at university. Christ. I mean,
making careless mistakes or lacking attention to detail.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't think there's a single one of those 18 or 9 for James because he wasn't paying attention. where they're not a problem at university and you're expected to be able to do them or it's a character flaw. And then add to that emotional dysregulation, even worse, rejection sensitivity, unsolicited feedback from assessments is how it works. And you didn't have any say in how we're assessed. There's no like, oh, how do you want to be assessed? I used to do that. I literally would do that. We can get around dodgy teachers at university by putting in, you know, burnout and hard work. Dodgy assessment is impossible to get around. You've got to work on their terms. That's really difficult. And then finally, look at the executive functions or executive dysfunctions. That is ADHD University Central.
So what support can a university put in place that would be better for us?
And that's it, isn't it? That's the question. It's an individual question, as you well know. There isn't a lot of evidence supporting extended time for exams. We find it funny. It does work for some people with ADHD, but not on average. When most people I know with ADHD, because I've asked a lot of people this, they laugh at the idea of like an extra half an hour when you're already bored in the exam. It's kind of laughable, really. Some universities, and I've heard of a few, who have guided like observed breaks at uni.
Yeah, that line there has just torpedoed my tip, for part two, because that was my tip. To have guided breaks. So I've got to think of something else. No, cheers.
I mean, it's in the script, James, written down, hasn't it?
I know. I'm not going to read your bit, so I'm in the boring.
Another thing would be make the questions less ambiguous. That's what universities could do. But, James, you might not have read this article, actually, but there was a Times Higher Educational Supplement article in, I think it was 2022, and there were recommendations from the authors. If I just check who the authors were, it was James Brown and Alex Connor. And...
You're citing their own paper.
There's an ethical dilemma here, what I'm choosing to ignore. And bearing in mind, this is based on opinion, not even evidence, though. It sort of is evidence. We put the reference papers in the article. But dead quick, boring list clacks on. Educating students and university staff about ADHD, theirs and others. Providing support without demanding a goddamn diagnosis. If a student in freshers week goes to the GP, they won't be treated probably until after graduation. So just accept it. Think about coexisting conditions in every ADHD conversation, especially specific learning difficulties, autism, anxiety, you know, all of them really. There's no especially. Support staff. That sounds quite stoked, doesn't it?
Velta.
Do you remember? And you probably see it too, Sam, where you are, but universities were like, it's Mental Health Awareness Week. We've got to support all the students by doing 24 hours, seven of extra work without pay. It's dead common. Support staff with ADHD traits and any mental health issues. It's not, if you, I know he's a little bit of a knob, but ADHD friend Richard Branson said about Virgin, I support the staff first. That means the customers will be supported that way round. It isn't the other way around. That whole bullshit, and it's true of students as well, that the customer is always right. Everyone quotes that, but they forget the next bit, which is explicitly only on their matters of taste, nothing else. And not, you know, it's not about everybody having a right to... Oh, it's frustrating. So support the staff first. Shape the lessons, exams, coursework to take into account executive dysfunction, like impaired time perception. Planning seminars, assessments, lectures, agreed time goals, maybe deadlines, shorter milestones. Be clear, deadline reminders. It's not hard. So ask yourself, what do you need? A consensus statement that what we didn't write on students and ADHD, published by the UK Adult ADHD Network. It's a huge national research network. In BMC Psychiatry, it's a journal, James. It's like a big load of paper that proper scientists read. Oh, it doesn't. I'll explain it afterwards. They said this. A multimodal approach with practical advice is needed, with guidance and recommendations based on expert consensus that can be adapted to support ADHD in individual university students, moving away from the learning disability model only toward personalized interventions, timely access to treatment, reasonable adjustments, and general educational support. So the main thing to remember is ask the individual student what might help. See if you can do it.
Is that it? I was miles away. Honestly, no, honestly, I wasn't. I, you know, filter you out as it is. Thank you. Awful, dull. Let's have a break, please. And then it says, here comes a jingle.
Yeah, I put that because we got a new jingle, haven't we, James?
See you in part two. Alex, hi.
Aight. What's up?
Hello, Governor.
Welcome back to episode 159 of the ADHD Adults podcast, where we are talking about ADHD and higher education. Hi.
Hiya.
The part where we talk about our personal reflections and those two will get tips, but I never do.
Ding.
James, you're first on the list, so I always go to you first.
Thank you, Sam. I'd like to think that it's that for that reason and not because I've got anything useful to say.
which you haven't.
No, obviously. I can separate this obviously into two bits, when I went through higher education and when I worked there, and I'm going to do that. I had a very non-linear path into higher education because of people pleasing, I hanged around with the wrong kids at school and fucked around a lot. And thought, for example, it was cool to have the record for being kicked out of a lesson quickest by walking in and telling the teacher to fuck off immediately.
It would
celebrate 7 seconds. And it was like, yeah, that's amazing, but not to actually get good GCSEs and turn up for A-levels. So I started to be a nurse. I told the story before, broke my back, had to finish nursing. And luckily, the university year was starting a week after that. And because my nursing college was... aligned with the University of Wolverhampton, Wally Polly, I just phoned up and said, can I do a degree? And their admissions policy, which was very robust, was yes, turn up Monday. Didn't even ask me any questions. So I'd always been interested, and whenever I do the little talks, I talk about this, I'd always been interested in biology, fascinated in it. Didn't have many friends as a child. You know, the only book I ever read was the Collins Illustrated Encyclopedia of Family Health and Disease. I was fascinated with health and disease from a very young age. So I knew that's what kind of why I went into nursing. I knew that biology, medicine, science, that was something that I got reward from. But within a degree, you do modules, different areas, for example. And the ones that I did not find rewarding, I couldn't prepare for them, didn't attend the lectures as much, struggled to revise for them, and didn't do very well. I got a 2-1 upper second class degree, which I was told when I was at Wolverhampton, if you don't get a 2-1, your degree's not worth the paper it's written on. Imagine being told that in a tutorial where half of the people probably aren't going to get a 2-1, that your degree's not going to be the paper it's worth on, mate. I missed out on getting a first because I impulsively, not just from being thick, I impulsively chose two final year modules, which I didn't read the module descriptors for. And thought, oh, clinical pharmacology, that sounds interesting. It wasn't. It was about selling medicines. We had to dress up in a suit and do a presentation like we were drug reps. And of course I thought
that. I mean, that is what that module's for, I guess, isn't it? But you'd think it'd be like mechanism of action or...
Exactly. Wow. So I, as a student, not knowing I had ADHD, not knowing why it was that I could revise and learn sub-subjects, but just wouldn't, would just put the other ones off and... you know, and struggling in exams, always being the first person, always the first person out of an exam, sometimes even waiting for the first half an hour to be over when you can't leave to put my hand up and say, I'm done, and get out, because it would just be a vomit of words onto the page and then get out. And then I ended up obviously doing a PhD, etc. And that experience was very different. And it, I suppose it goes beyond higher education to some extent. Now, as an academic, I think that's when I really started to see the challenges of ADHD. It's hard enough thing as a student, particularly if you have pick a subject that might not be rewarding and without the support. But as an academic, it was a fucking nightmare. And I actually coach quite a few academics with ADHD who are going through the same thing. I was once called by a prominent researcher who had bad teaching feedback, a dancing monkey with jazz hands. That was why students liked me, because I would try.
I can't. You didn't always wear a monkey. You could have been. It was a horse sometimes, wasn't it?
Exactly. No. Exactly. No. Exactly. Yeah. Inappropriate. Yeah. But just trying to make lectures interesting and engaging was seen by others as being a weakness. Yeah. No, you should go there and say the facts, and then if they ask a question, don't answer it. That was what that person did. And
that's so annoying. To put so much time and effort into making things different, the hats and the things,
that came from my experience as a student, knowing that when you've just got that dry, dull person, you know, I used to teach anatomy. It's one of the hardest subjects to make interesting, because it's just here are the names of some bones, here are the names of some muscles and some organs, and etc. Now, during lockdown, this really got amped up, because we had to deliver everything just through a computer screen, and none of the students had their cameras on or would talk, and it was really difficult. But again, I tried my best to make it interesting so that they would even turn up, because now lectures are recorded. Lots of students don't turn up because they know they can watch a recording. So this is where the animal masks used to come on, and to get students to stay, it'd be right if you can guess what animal mask I'm going to wear at the end of the lecture. You can win a chocolate bar. So they'd all stay till the end and then put animal emojis in the chat.
Do you remember we did the Jurassic Park thing as well?
I was about to say, yeah, it went a bit far when I agreed.
You ate three of the students.
I agreed for the endocrinology students that if they attended all the lectures, I would wear an inflatable T-Rex outfit. Yeah. And we recreated with the music from Jurassic Park a scene during a lecture where I wore an inflatable T-Rex outfit and came into a room and attacked, I think it was like a cat. Bear. I was in a mental health crisis, Al, at that point.
It was brilliant. They loved it.
I mean, the students fucking loved it. But again, it's not something that is spoken of as a good pedagogical approach.
I disagree.
Towards the end of my time in academia, a few things happened which I think were interesting. Students with ADHD started to come to me because they weren't getting supported. They had heard either the podcast or from somebody else or from me saying in every lecture I've got ADHD, and they started to come to me. And then to Eric, when Eric got his diagnosis, and we were a little support group for all the students who weren't getting the support that they needed, and that were really struggling to even get an extension sometimes, even though it was written into their individual
ding
report. And that, I'll take it, ding.
Thank you.
And that shouldn't be the case. You shouldn't have to find a lecturer that's got ADHD to go to them to say, I'm really struggling and I need help. Can you talk to my personal tutor? Can you talk to this module leader? That shouldn't happen. And the last thing that happens...
When they came to you with this difficult thing, were you still in the T-Rex outfit? That's how I'm visualizing it.
Of course I was, yes. Oh, I was. Always.
Oh, sorry to hear that. Milk?
when I left or decided I was leaving academia around the same time I was asked to write for a Nature paper, Al. Nature, you know the journal Nature. It's quite high high ranking, isn't it? I know you've got a paper in Cell, which is lesser. But it was about pursuing a scientific career when you've got ADHD. And when you're an academic and you write a paper, because it's a money-making scheme and the journals have to charge you to access it if your university doesn't pay for it, I've never had more academics contact me asking me for a copy of any of the 60 or 70 papers I've got than that one. Yeah. So many people got in touch because it's behind a paywall saying, can I have a copy of that? Because I want to read it, which tells you, you know, how many people with ADHD end up in academia. And it was my goodbye letter. In the end, it was very much a, this has been a struggle, I wasn't supported, and I hope it isn't the same for everybody else, which is a really long personal reflection. Apologies, mine are normally shorter. In terms of a tip, which I've now had to change because Alex torpedoed my tip. If you're thinking of going to university, choose the subject wisely. For many children, adolescents, young adults, there is parental pressure to do a subject that's associated with a career that, for example, it can make you wealthy, or it could be, you know, going to medicine because your siblings did, or going to law or architecture. If you don't find those topics or those subjects rewarding, you are more likely to struggle. And many of the students that I worked with who changed degree after the first year changed radically from marketing to biology, or from biology to something in languages, because that was something that actually they were interested in and found reward from. So really pick the subject you're studying wisely, because otherwise you can make it more difficult for yourself. That's me. I need to rest my mouth. Ding. Sam, you know, Sam.
Well, I went to sixth form because I didn't know what else to do. And then I went to college after that just because my mum was. She was going to study accountancy, so I thought I would. And I'd never even, university wasn't even on my radar. It wasn't something that people did where I grew up or in my family. But I've tried numerous times to get a degree with the OU since then. And I just can't. I can cope to a certain level, and then I just can't do it. Everything just falls apart. So yeah, I haven't really got a lot of experience with this, but obviously I work in university, and I actually I'm doing one thing. Well, this isn't really a degree or higher education, or is it? I don't know. It's a level 5 degree apprenticeship thing that we're doing for my coaching, but this is the first time that I've studied since having ADHD. So I declared it, and the response at first was a little bit odd, but then somebody met me from the whatever they're called team, because every university has enabling, a team like a disability team that can help you,
and whatever they're called team,
whatever they're called team. And yeah, I had a meeting with them, and I was really scared because I thought, are they gonna expect me to tell them what I need, because I don't know? And the only thing I could think of was, I need you to communicate really clearly to me exactly what I have to do and what is expected of me, because I'm not very good at I take things very literally, and I'm not very good at reading between the lines kind of thing. But they were really, really good, and she basically went through all the things that they can offer me, and I said I need to be prepared in my head for everything that's going to happen. So if I can know in advance what's going to happen, that will really help me. And she said, well, we can give you the slides before any lectures and things that you have, so that you'll know exactly what's going to happen. And during those workshops, which can go on for a whole day, you'll get extra breaks. And when you want a break, you don't have to tell anybody, just switch your camera off, because it's going to be virtual. Switch your camera off, switch your microphone off, and go and have a little break, jump around or whatever, and come back whenever you like. And they were saying, I don't need this because I prefer writing to speaking. I'm not very good at speaking, but they can change all of the written essays to discussions if that works out better for me, and they can change the end assessment if that's better good. For me.
In the spirit of positivity, this is Aston University, is it? Because we need to shout out the...
No.
Who is it?
Aston University are paying for it, but it's a company called Raise the Bar that are
and they've got their own team.
Yes, they have their own team.
Well done,
yes.
Raise the Bar.
Take a boo.
Yeah. Although actually our inclusion team at Aston University are really good as well. We know one student, you know them as well, James, that actually was referred to a psychiatrist and got a diagnosis through the university paid for it privately, and they got diagnosis, which I think that's kind of rare, but
really, really
good. Mm. Yeah. Gosh. Alex, what about you?
No. I've got questions.
Sorry.
Because as usual, you've missed out a load of salient points. Now, when you were studying at the Open University, this is all relevant to ADHD.
Right.
You were doing this at the same time as a full-time job. And I think we had the homeless charity at the time, which obviously I set up. And then as a bit like this charity just dumped on you to handle. So you were working already. That's a good thing. You were already doing like 60 hours a week and also trying to then do this extra work, which meant that you will, as we often do, we were closer to a deadline. You were leaving coursework until the night before, staying up all night doing that coursework. I couldn't even look at you or talk to you because you would absolutely eviscerate me if I was in your presence. And then you'd get 81% and still say, I'm shit at this, I'm thick. I can't do much for this.
Yeah, and actually, it really, as much as, because that's my rhetoric, right? That's how I define myself.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And so when I got a good mark, that would destroy me. I couldn't handle it because it was objective evidence that I wasn't completely shit, and I would be, and I'm nearly crying now, I would be in floods of tears.
Well, that's what you're here for, to remind you.
Yeah, do the funny cry.
No.
do it.
Yeah, I just couldn't.
It's all right. You shit at loads of stuff instead of that. It's all right.
I know, that's true. Thank you.
But
yeah, I just couldn't fucking handle it at all. The whole thing was just too much for me. I couldn't do it. So,
trust
to anybody that can. I just couldn't. Alex, what about you?
No, I think what you've just described is so common. The adults with ADHD, I really, really do. I have that too. I was just, I didn't have the same self-esteem problems you have. So, I was able to find a workaround because of privilege. So I have a love-hate relationship with university. I like winning. So I did the wrong thing for so long. And, James has come out of character a bit.
I know, yeah.
Don't like it. Assessments are the problem. I hyper focus on them. I don't feel in charge of them, so I ruin my emotional physical health to make sure I get kick it into touch, and it's not healthy for me. So I really hated, especially my PhD. Hated it. Shouldn't have done it. Nailed it in the end, but it was so unhealthy for me.
So what can I just ask that? So are you, because I'm great at exams for some reason.
Yeah,
really
yeah,
good
too.
At it. I don't know why, but essays I just couldn't do because it's that longer kind of, and I had too long to plan it out and work out what to do.
Me too.
And I'd question everything and just couldn't do it. Whereas exams, I just had a short amount of time and that worked for me because I'd just write down what I knew, leave and would do well.
I think this is that thing about dopamine interest. When I did a coaching qualification, which is nothing like my PhD, it really was minor. It's like the minimum what you can get for accreditation with the EMCC. But I found it all easy because I would have done it anyway, without anybody watching.
Yeah.
And that was the difference for me. So that essay, I was writing. Yeah, there was a longer deadline, but I would have thought about those things anyway. All the scripts, James and I write the book, we write that as a hobby. Anyway, and that really that's what James was saying about his tip, which he stole from me. The tip is learn on your terms. Try not to focus on what the qualification is. It isn't as relevant as you think. People don't care afterwards. But if you need something professionally, then you do. But try and align what you want to learn with what you would learn for free by going down a Wikipedia rabbit hole. Make those two things the same if you can. And most people with ADHD learn vocationally as well, and they learn actively, which means they can see how this would help someone. It's the self-esteem, Sam. If you've got to learn for you to pass an exam, why would you? Because you don't deserve to pass. That's how I always felt. If you have to learn because you're going to teach someone and they'll benefit or they'll feel better, we can learn much more. All the stuff you've learned for ADHD, all of it is to help the community.
And exactly, you know that.
Fucking loads about it because of that motivation.
Sam knows, for example, she picked Europe earlier, and she does with me, about the geographical locations where you get certain sports. Exactly, she knows so much because she's learned it for a purpose and not for a qualification.
We should probably tell people that when Sam said, when I said England and Wales, and Sam said, oh, not Wales, I muted the recording for a second and said, Sam, don't you ever fucking speak to me like that again. And then we played again. We extended it out of that. Yeah. I will fucking end you. Know your place. I did all that, obviously. But you have to learn, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I do.
I'm even nervous saying that in case you hit me with your massive muscle.
I can't reach through the screen. I wish I could.
So that's it.
You're done. Brilliant. We'll have a quick game then, mate, because we have got time.
Right then.
So this is, I suppose, vaguely jingle related. I may have mentioned, I can't remember the last episode, that even though I didn't need any of this because we can use computers now to alter guitar sounds, I still went out and bought, you know, a lot of guitar equipment.
But obviously,
obviously, and more on its way. And obviously made mistakes during that process. So this is guitar pedal related, Alex. You know, when a guitar makes a nice noise, it's because there's a pedal which makes it, modifies the sound. So did I buy two of the same type of pedal, because I was frantically just looking at what are the best pedals to get, and I ordered 7 pedals. Yeah, I know. Did I too, when buying one of said pedals, not notice the autofill in the register account and registered an account with an email address I no longer have access to, so I can't complete that order? Or three, because the pedals need to be supplied by chargers, did I buy 6 9-volt chargers for pedals before realizing that you can buy a unit where you can just have a little cable from that unit to all the pedals, and then bought that as well?
Oh, that's a really horrible one. That it could easily be any of those three, couldn't it? I don't think you bought two of the same type, because you spend a lot of time comparing blood types, so you're used to that kind of thing. Because you're a Dracula GC. Do you see what I did? Oh, I don't think it was autofill, because your old emails, Dracula at yahoo.com, it doesn't exist anymore. So they wouldn't let you. So you bought the volt charger thing. Oh, look at his smug face. I can tell immediately.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you're wrong. Yeah, no. Autofill.
What a dickhead.
Which, even though I'm still a visiting professor, they've cancelled my email address.
Shit, I need to contact them again.
Yeah, I know. So anyway, so that, I believe, is 10-7, Alex. I'm forging ahead, and I'm so happy. I'm so happy to go into the break in that knowledge. We'll be back in part three to answer your questions.
Shit game. Welcome back to episode 159 of the ADHD Adults Podcast, where we're talking about ADHD and higher education. As always, for like 3 weeks or two or one or 10, I don't know, we're answering your questions, and we're starting with, I think we've done a corporate thing, haven't we, Sam? Haven't we done, like, got higher education related questions in this?
Yeah, because you asked me to.
Yeah, I'm really happy about it. It's like being like real actual broadcasting grown-ups. To coincide with our million, what is it, plays since we moved to, it's absolutely ambiguous. No, that wrong word. So, Sam?
I've got a question. That. I haven't, but Jane has, from Patreon. Hi, Jane. Is there a good way to find out your learning style? I've been putting off going back into education because I don't know how I learn or retain new information. Maybe impacted by skill regression since diagnoses. Or DHD, and that's from Jane on Patreon.
Can I, James?
Yes, please do.
learning styles exist in humans. All humans, all learning styles, always. The idea that you have a preference for one of them is utter horseshit. Utter. I mean, this has been known for decades and decades, and so many universities still talk about it. So many schools teach it. It is fucking ridiculous. It's terrifying. I'm a visual learner. Are you? When reading, so are most people. Everyone is all of them, all the time, all of them. No one has learned to tightrope walk from a textbook. That's kinesthetic. It really is nonsense, honestly. And even the idea that you're more that than someone else, firstly, there's no way to tell. And we all do all of them at different levels, depending what we're learning, depending what time of day it is, depending what we've had for breakfast. It's utter bullshit, like MBTI, as Jane says. And I would argue even more so than MBTI, which at least references Jung's psychology, gets it quite badly wrong, but at least references something accurate. So, yeah, horse shit. James?
I don't think I've seen you that angry.
Furious about it.
Podcast, and I really like that, because obviously this, normally it's my role and I haven't had to summon up any anger. And yeah, nothing else
so
to say.
The whole bar. Shit.
Yeah. Well, in that we have different preferences and stuff, but like in general, absolute bullshit.
Yeah, and I guess it changes and we've got to change it up, yeah?
Of course it does. It makes a mockery as well of people start to doubt themselves. Oh, I can't do that because it's book learning, or I can't do that because it's handsy and I'm not hand. I am handsy. I'm not that kind of handsy. And I'm really not. And so it stops us doing things, and it's that stops us learning, the self-block, not some mystical preference, that biological innate preference.
I am, interestingly though, because I can't picture things in my head, I can't, when I go to pole, I can't watch him and learn. So I'll watch him do a combo, but I can't replay it in my head. So I can't, so I'm really bad at learning that way. But if I read something in a book and it's that visual way, I can remember the words that I've read in the book. So that's visual.
What if, they are, but what if you then don't do it and then wait a month? Would you be able to do it?
No.
And that's it. So Confucius figured this out.
I can't do it straight away. Like I watch something and immediately it's forgotten because I can't replay it. I don't learn. Yeah.
But even if you've read it, but you haven't tried it, you're going to forget, right? This is, Confucius said, listen and forget, see and remember,
Delta.
Do and understand. That was that. See, if you hear it, you'll forget it. If you see it, whether you read it or watch it,
I'll remember
you will
remember if I hear it.
What?
I don't remember it if I see it, but I'll remember it if I hear it.
You think you take verbal instructions well?
You said if I read stuff, I can remember it. But if you watch
That's seeing.
If I watch stuff, I can't remember it. No. But if afterwards my instructor has to say it to me in a chant, then I can remember it.
Yeah. He chants it or you chant it?
He chants it and gets me to chant it, and that's how I remember it.
Right. So it's the chanting it, if you see what I mean. That's a form of doing.
Yes. So he makes up a chant for me, and then
if he did the chant and you just heard it and didn't learn it, would it work?
If I did it straight afterwards, yeah.
So if you didn't chant,
to do it.
I feel this has become a chant-heavy answer.
It has, yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
In my head, it's Gregorian as well. How are you imagining the chant, James?
It's her old Buddhist chant, Nam-myo Renge Kyo, whatever it was.
Nam-myo Renge Kyo.
Yeah. Yeah. But should we move on?
Absolute nonsense. Yeah, I've got one.
Go on.
It's from a Jenny Kavanagh. Hi, Jenny. Says, is there any help towards university fees if you are diagnosed with ADHD? James, do you want to hit that? Sam, you're both pretty much more accurate than me. I don't know. Sam
probably knows. Well, I'd actually respond, because we had a discussion about this on Patreon, and I'd actually responded saying you can get disabled students allowance. But Lucy very kindly pointed out, she's brilliant on all this because she works in a university, that the disabled students allowance is actually to help with the extra things that you need because of your disability. So it's to support the student rather than help with fees.
Right, like access to work when you're employment.
Yeah, that kind of thing. So they give you extra money so that you can do the things that you need to be able to do a degree. But actually, help with fees, it's dependent on each university, depending on what bursaries and stuff they've got, isn't it? And scholarships and things like that.
So no government, no, like, just for, if you diagnose ADHD, there's no anything for the fees? Like,
not to help with the fees, no, just to help with all the extra costs.
Happy to help, Jenny. No.
it's worth saying how much DSA is, though, the maximum, because actually it's a decent chunk of cash.
It is.
The disabled student's allowance, how much?
Yeah, to a maximum, I imagine, over the course of the degree in England, it's just over 25 grand. In Wales, it's just over 32,000. And Northern Ireland, it's exactly £25,000. So that is...
Okay, so it really is...
Yeah, to pay for the extra stuff that's needed. Yeah. That really could help split over 3 years.
Blimey.
Brilliant. Right, third, final question. Yes, this is from Liz McKennell. This is far too late for me. Got my degree, spent 10 years in academia, burnt out, quit. My God, that feels very close to the bone.
Can't relate.
But it would be really useful to talk about what kinds of special accommodations might help students with ADHD at different levels of study. It might also be useful to talk about how students and staff can sometimes be referred directly to a psychiatrist for an assessment through their uni, student support services or occupational health, rather than spending years on an NHS waiting list or shelling out wads of cash. Who wants to start with that?
I think Liz might notice that we dealt with some of that in the psychoeducation. So you can claim a writing credit, Liz. On the first bit. God, Sam, what have you got for Sam?
Sorry, I zoned out a bit then. Yes. Oh, yeah. So that, I suppose, I covered what mine were. But yeah, I think it depends on the university, though, doesn't it? Because some people might want you to say what you think is difficult, which can sometimes be hard for us to work out.
Yeah.
So I think if it is hard for you to work out, you can ask them, you know, what kind of accommodations they put in place for people in the past, just to give you a bit of an idea. Because once they started listing these things for me, then I kind of thought, oh, yeah, that would actually be useful. And actually, if you do this as well and blah, blah, blah. So that would be good. And yes, we did talk about the student we know that has been diagnosed. But I think that is rare. I don't think that everybody would be able to get referred.
It is, and it's normally an educational psychologist and not a psychiatrist. So these are the types of assessments which normally wouldn't be recognised by the NHS, but they would provide the support in.
Yes, they're the ones that are routinely offered. But the person that we're talking about, you might not be aware, but they were actually referred to a psychiatrist and got their.
Yeah. Which is incredible.
True diagnosis really, by a psychiatrist. Yeah. But yes, usually you are diagnosed by somebody it's not accepted by the NHS.
Even though, so an education psychologist, as people might not know, isn't a doctor, like there might be a doctor like we are, so not one. But they're really great and they know what they're talking about and they're definitely going to get it right, 99.9% of the time. But they can't prescribe. They often team up with an independent prescriber privately to get you your meds. But then to get that through shared care with your GP can be a bit of a challenge, can't it? That's the thing. Sam, a couple of things you said which are so accurate. I don't know how that happened. Maybe it was luck. But when you don't know what... said too many nice things to you today. So they will say, what do you struggle with? And you're bound to go, I don't know. Can I have it in writing, please? So putting you on the spot emotionally to talk about yourself, Christ, that's one of them. So ask if they'll work with you to explore sometimes that you've struggled in the past with learning, but also when you haven't. And go outside of traditional education. So when haven't you struggled? When was it, oh God, that felt like cheating. When I did my coaching qualification, I couldn't believe it. This can't be the course. It was a right laugh and I loved it and I got value out of it. And then I realized it was just the right thing for me. And when they said to you, here are some things, and you say, oh, yes, that'll be useful. Try and phrase it, not you, but everybody is, that might be useful. Because the shame of trying and it's shit for you, and you think, oh, that didn't work, I'm just useless, is really painful.
What is that noise?
I can't hear a noise, but my lights are flickering.
Well, I can hear a noise.
It's a poltergeist.
Okay, well, nobody else can, so...
Oh, no, I can as well. It's quite loud.
Can you?
But I like it.
Yeah. It's like...
It's a ghost. Oh, it's obviously a ghost.
Starting again.
I think we can power through this because we're nearly finished.
Okay, then fair enough.
So think what might be useful. And remember, all hacks, tips and tricks for ADHD either don't work or stop working. So have them on cycles and it's okay to talk about that. James, what have you got? Because you did this a lot, right?
I just plugged my microphone, so I'm not sure if it's working anymore.
We can hear you. And this noise has stopped.
Yeah.
Okay. Probably me then, wasn't it? What I would say is, in terms of the adjustments for students, and apologies for any academics out there who do put a lot of effort in, but in my experience, many academics honestly just cannot be asked to set up an alternative assessment because they're very busy and they've got multiple exams during an exam period. So therefore, having to set up specifically different exams for a module which would be marked in a different way, which would be structured in a different way, a lot of academics don't like having to do that because it's extra work when they're busy.
And they wouldn't be given any time to do it, would they, in terms of recognition?
No, or support, or guidance.
Yeah.
But actually, alternative assessments are probably one of the most useful things. So Alex talked about, you know, having these guided breaks. So instead of just having an extra half an hour, be able to stop every 10, 20 minutes, and you're in a room with somebody so you can't, you know, check the internet and get the answers, but take a break. Or, and this is so simple and very rarely gets used, open book exams. Because exams don't test knowledge and understanding. They test your ability to remember something. But if you say, bring in the textbook, then it's much easier and a level playing field for everybody as an exam. Seen exam questions where you say, here's four questions. You're going to be asked two of them, so prepare. There are loads of different ways you can do assessments.
I want to give people their final third year exam questions in Freshers Week and work towards it. I would love that. That's what we should always be doing, but we can't.
Yeah. And so there are definitely things that can be done. Other things like note takers in lectures, which are routinely provided for people with visual or hearing issues. There's lots that can be done, but sometimes don't get done. So that's what I would like to see as an ideal situation, I suppose. Is that it?
Thanks, James. Yeah, take us home.
I think so, yeah.
I'll take us home. Well, that was episode 159 of the ADHD Adults podcast, where we talked about ADHD in higher education. If you're still listening and by a miracle enjoyed this episode, then something Patreon. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, all. Trigger warning, klaxon. Klaxon, klaxon. Klaxon, klaxon. Big klaxon.
Trigger warning, klaxon. Klaxon, klaxon. Klaxon, klaxon. So on Monday, I missed my poo window. You know you have a poo window.
No, Dan, I've got to immediately stop you there. A poo window.
Yeah, you know you have a poo window where if you don't poo during that window, you can't then poo.
Oh, no, not at all.
Really?
Yeah, because we're humans. Yeah. Where did it go? Back up into your mouth?
I don't know, but if I miss the poo window, then I can't poo for ages. So I missed the poo window and then had to go onto campus and then couldn't poo. And then halfway through the day, my body decided it needed to poo, but I can't poo at work. I can't. That's impossible for me to do. So
biologically,
then I'm having to hold it in. I just can't mentally. I just can't do it.
Is this a second poo window?
People that can just, you know, when you're having a wee and you're trying not to make a noise when you're weeing, and somebody just comes in and they sit on the toilet and they poo and they trump and they don't care. Oh my God, I admire those people so much. It's amazing.
You admire them.
Yes, because I wish that I could be that way. But I can't poo at work. I barely even wee. I have to go to a toilet that's way out of the way and make sure that my wee doesn't make any noise.
I like teasing you, but I'm concerned by the anxiety that signals from your hand. Like, genuinely.
When I first met James, I used to pretend I was having a shower every time I wanted a wee, and there was no way that I could ever poo.
Yeah, now she literally shits with the door open.
I do, yeah. I don't like the door closed when I'm
pooing. Exactly. Now, I'm not as secretive as a cat, but nobody can actually watch me poo. I don't mind them hearing. But
I don't like you watching me.
I know,
I
have to turn the webcam off, don't I, James?
But we have but we have conversations which are very awkward whilst you're turtling.
I'm comfortable with you now, but I can't believe you don't have a poo window.
I used to have a friend who was dating a squaddy, and when they were first chatting, she was talking to him, and she could hear a bit echoing. She said, "Are you having a poo while talking to me?" And he went, "No."
Ha 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 ha!